The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Mark with Sean Hackett. Sean Hackett is with Hackett Financial out of Boca Raton, Florida. He's nice enough to come on and talk about what's happening in the world of commodities. Sean, how are you doing this morning, man?
I'm doing really good, Casey. Doing real good. Getting ready to get back on the road to Kansas. I got three different opportunities, one this week, two next week. And so Kansas is my place this for the next couple of weeks. So
it's probably one of the best states out there, Sean. I'm not going to lie to you. When you get down there, you're going to fall in love with it. So it's where are you going? You got Topeka, Overland Park, and Wichita, right?
Correct. Yep. So I'm expecting great things.
You should expect great things from the great state of Kansas. So right on, man. All right. Well, safe travels as you make those trips. And yep. So let's talk a little about what's going on in the world here, man. So we've got some things shaping up right now that are going to lead to market volatility, like we always see, you know, this time of the year. We've got planters getting ready to start rolling. Some are out there already. You know, we've got planting is underway. Right now, it looks like the, you know, corn's 3% planted right now. Average is 2%, so we're just getting started, right?
Right.
Cotton's 5% planted, and 6% is the average, so we're about where we should be. And, you know, you look at spring wheat planted right now, you got 3% planted, and the average is 3% right now. So, just getting started. Everything's white should be, just like you talked about in April, starting out with good weather to got planting and those kind of things. So we got that going on. We've got some dry weather over in Russia in the key wheat growing areas, and we've got corn going into pollination down in South America. So I guess, Sean, we got a lot of moving parts here. Let's talk about the corn market right now, just because of where we're at. As you look at what's going on in Brazil and the pollination there, how's that particular segment going to affect what you see happening in the corn market right now?
Well, we're moving into the critical phase here in second crop corn in Brazil. And normally, the way you get a good crop in second crop, safrinha crop, is you have to have very good subsoil moisture, because the very fact that they planted in February into March means it's pollinating during the dry season. So in order for it to pollinate correctly during the dry season, you have to have ample subsoil moisture to carry the crop through. We don't have that. If you look at deep layer subsoil moisture 3 meters down, it's purples and reds all over Mato Grosso, the worst really ever since they've been measuring it in this manner. Like 50 years, we just haven't seen the soils this dry. And they've been getting a little bit of rainfall here, you know, the last week or two, to keep the topsoil, you know, moist. But that's going to come to a screeching halt here next week. And we're going to move into a Boulay-Bramel, drier pattern at the dry season. So normally it's drier, and it's going to be even drier than it normally is through the heart of pollination, which means that topsoil has gotten a little moisture. It's going to go away very, very quick. Some heat's coming in, and we think the crop's just going to fall apart. We're going to be monitoring vegetative health indices over the next, you know, as we move in, and we expect that we're going to see this, you know, those condition ratings just really fall off a cliff. And they already planted substantial less acres. So under almost every scenario that we can see, we think the crop's going to be down 20% year over year. It could be down considerably more, depending on exactly how the moisture plays out through the entire situation. So to me, the number one exporter of the world for corn last year, if they're going to have a crop down 20% year over year or more, it's going to mean that the market needs to react to that. And it's going to mean that all the balance sheets that have corn carryouts who are putting certain demand figures out there are going to have to raise at some point their corn exports for the upcoming crop cycle. And all this should provide a catalyst to scare some of these shorts that are in the market for corn and get them to want to kind of lower some risk and buy back in. And so we think should be a big, big catalyst. Not now. The next 2 weeks, planting is going to roll. It's going to go real well. I think we're going to be ahead of schedule. But I think from, let's say, you know, late third week to fourth week of April, I think that's the catalyst that really gets the corn market going. And then we dovetail that in to the potential for a frost event as we approach mid-May. And if we get a lot of corn on the ground and we start seeing it develop enough with a frost coming in, that could add some additional insult to injury about replantings. And of course, it'll slow down the planting rate to boot. So all that says to me that, you know, that the corn market, after making its initial low here in March and kind of blocking and tackling, kind of basing at this higher level, I think we're setting up for some additional upside as we move into May. And hopefully, you know, that provides a good opportunity for farmers to cash sell. That would be the hope that we have, is that we're kind of prepping our customers who need to get rid of old crop and need to catch up on new crop, that maybe that offers a good opportunity to sell on a rally at when prices make a little more sense than selling into the hole, like everyone told them to do a month ago when we were sitting there near the lows, you know, near $4.
Yeah. So I pulled up. I don't know if I can do this from out here, but I'm not getting what I want to see here. I'm trying to get my computer to work. I was going to pull up the current soil moisture map so that we could take a look at that. But there is like you're talking about, if you take a look at what's there and what's going on there, there is a lot of issues with what's going on in as far as what you're talking about, soil moisture maps and those kind of things. Especially when you look in the U.S., so we had a pretty good storm come through the west here. We got some really, really good. I mean, we probably got almost 2 inches of rain, I bet, in my area here where we got that. We got a blizzard-like scenario without the snow, right? It was not quite cold enough. We got a ton of moisture out of that. And as you look at how that stretched across the state of Nebraska up into Iowa and over into Minnesota, you see some areas there where that was pretty, you know, they had some issues with some drought situations. They're not nearly as bad as they were, but again, that's surface moisture, not necessarily root depth moisture. I guess, Sean, as you're looking at what's going on right now, talk a little bit about the situation you see developing after the storm came through, kind of some of those scenarios that you see that could play out in the United States when it comes to the drought situation.
Well, first of all, if you want me to share my screen, I can pull up one of the I have it up here. So yeah. I said share screen, right? Yeah. And then I should be able to just pull it up. Let's see. Yeah, here we go. Share. Can you see it?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, this is Mato Grosso. You can just see, like, look down here. We're in the 2 percentile. That means it's 98% of the past years were not as dry. This is 1 meter down. 1 meter down in the ground. I mean, this is just horrendous. Horrendous. And so if this reef moisture stops and we go into a drier than normal pattern, then the topsoil is over, and this is what's left to keep the crop going. Throw in a little heat, which is expected to come in. I mean, this is not going to go well, Casey, unless you have above normal rainfall for this late April to late May timeframe. And none of my work and none of the models that I see are suggesting anything like that. So this is a big it should be a big catalyst, Casey. It should be a big catalyst. So
yeah, that's going to be a big driver. So like you talked about, let's just stay right there for a minute. So as you talked about, if you're looking at a scenario where, you know, 20% of the market, 20% of a crop in Brazil is not available, like it was last year and the previous year before that, where the dollar situation's at right now, how is that going to team up with what you see happening as some possible exports for the U.S. crop that gets put maybe?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at last year, every single bushel we lost in exports, Brazil gained. So it wasn't like demand was weak. Right. It was weak for U.S. corn. It wasn't weak for corn. So whatever they lose, we're going to gain. And it's substantial. You know, it's we're not talking about 50 million bushels. We're talking about something along the lines of potentially, you know, 500 or 700 million bushels of additional, exports at least that we would be getting that we didn't have last year. And all things being equal, Casey, you simply remove that from the 2.1 or 2.2 billion bushel carryout. And all of a sudden you're at 1.5, 1.4, 1.6. You know, you're right on the doorstep to a weather problem saying we're not going to have enough corn. I mean, there's the difference between 1.5 and 2.1 is like massive. And that doesn't mean the market's going to do that immediately. But I think when the reality sets in about how small this crop's going to be and how we're going to start to see the business, like we're going to start to see those orders increasing. We're going to start, those weekly numbers are going to continue to be better and better. Then everyone's going to have to adjust these balance sheets. And that's, you know, that's not a, you know, an overnight sensation, but it's going to be a steady drumbeat of improving fundamentals as we go forward. And then if we're throwing a frost scare or hot July, like our forecast is saying is elevated this year, we get a lot of heat during that key July month for the U.S., you know, all of a sudden you can run some pretty scary scenarios really quick that what was once supposed to be a raw supply market could be not just like that. I mean, it's not that hard to get yourself there with a crop that small in the number one exporter of the world last year. It's just a big knockdown. I mean, just think if our crop was down 20%, you know, It's a big number, and the markets, you know, in Brazil, they know how to react quarter, everything, you know. But I think as we get into May, it's going to be a big, big story. I think a really big story that is going to be pretty impossible to ignore. And then that means that when we go into our growing season, Casey, that, and we start shifting how large these ending stocks are going to be, you know, it provides the opportunity for farmers to get some better prices than I think many were thinking they might have gotten, you know, a month or two ago from the bearishness that was out there. That was, in my opinion, probably some of the darkest sentiment I've ever seen in the 30 years that I've been watching grains and corn market. I mean, it was about as dark as I've ever seen it. But the darker the sentiment, the greater the opportunity when that darkness lightens up a little bit.
Yep. Okay. Let's jump over and talk a little bit about the soft red winter wheat situation that we see. So Russell, I can talk about when he's opened up the show here, they see some dryness in that area. It's a really key growing areas over there. You've seen some delayed of stopping exporting out of the Azov terminal over there, which that's one of the larger terminals that they ship stuff out of. So I guess, Sean, as you see these things develop and what we see happen here right now, talk a little bit about
that. Well, everyone has been pretty much saying the crop is in the bin already for Russian wheat. That's going to be this good crop, a big crop, a 90 million plus metric ton crop. It's already done. It's already harvested. It's already in the bin. It's already available. Of course, it's not. But that's where the market's been trading. And, you know, when you look at these soil moisture levels 1 meter deep, we're starting to see the southern, you know, the southern core southern belt there in Russia starting to show reds and purples, and it's expanding northward. And I don't see a lot of rain in the forecast through the end of April. And that means that, you know, we're at the point where they could still be fine, but an April without rain now means May is a must. And it sets up the potential that if they were to, you know, miss a couple more weeks of rainfall, they're going to start moving that 90, 92 down. And the longer it waits off, the longer they're going to have to bring it down. And all of a sudden, this large crop that's going to keep the world well fed and keep the low offer in there, all of a sudden it's not there. And then they start putting export restrictions like they've done in the past, and they start pulling bids. So you know, really, you know, I don't know if what you're alluding to, what they've been doing, has anything to do with that they're getting more concerned about weather. I don't know if it's geopolitics. I don't know if it's a little bit of both. But I can tell you that if they go into May and it hasn't rained much and their crop's deteriorating and that crop soil moisture levels are getting worse and worse, they're going to think twice about how aggressive they want to relinquish any more of the ending stocks from last year in case this good crop turns into a debacle, which it has happened before quite a few times in Russia. They can go from great crop to terrible crop very, very quickly if the rains don't fall in the spring. Nothing yet that's irreversible, but definitely, once again, like we're talking about corn, a story that could really be a big driver here near the end of April into May. End of April into May. End of April into May keeps looking to me like a lot of catalysts are developing for winter wheat, for corn, frost coming. Just a lot of things are just kind of shaping up that that window is a place we want to be looking for opportunities for the market to react to some of these things. And farmers just need to be ready about how do they want to reward that rally, how do they want to make those cash sales, and be ready to do whatever they feel the need to do to get in the right position. Because a lot of farmers, you know, seemed to have been behind, and a lot of the farmers got scared in the selling that $4 hole we were at a month ago because we were going to, you know, $2 corn, it was all over, it's never coming back. But if we get a good set of catalysts that get these speculators out of the marketplace, you won't be ready. This is a really good initial first shot opportunity to catch up, get yourself selling a rally, cash marketing a rally instead of, you know, getting caught being reactive. So the proactivity, they always promote being proactive, not reactive. What everyone was doing a month ago was reactive. All the analysts that were telling you to sell are being reactive. You got to be proactive, and we try to be as proactive as we can. Doesn't mean we're always right, but selling rallies, just get in the habit of doing that, especially if you're someone that's behind right now on those cash sales. There could be a really good opportunity developing if any of these levers get pulled. And of course, geopolitics, which I can't predict. I think the inauguration for Putin is May 7th. Oftentimes, leaders like to make do something big leading into and out of these celebrations. They like to make a big statement. Wouldn't surprise me if something happened geopolitically the closer we got to May 7th. I can't guarantee that. I don't know for sure, but I would be thinking that's a hotbed spot for something big to happen for Russia and Putin to show something to the world that, you know, they're still strong and you still need to, and you're still going to have to deal with us. That's just my speculation. So,
right on. Okay, let's take a look. let's revisit the cattle situation. Last week was a horrible week for cattle. I got banged around pretty good. If you look at some of the wholesale beef prices that came out here so far this week, they've had some pretty big jumps in what wholesale beef prices have done. I guess as you look at the cattle market now, are we stabilized from what the news from the avian flu situation, or is there still some? Right now,
we had the initial reaction, right? We had that initial reaction to the avian flu, the worst case scenario. The news has been pretty quiet, right? We have not had a lot of new, fresh news the last few days. And if you don't feed, if you don't feed that momentum trader, that speculator that's selling, then you're going to bounce. And so we're getting that bounce, or we're getting stabilization, let's put it that way, in the marketplace. Beyond that, however, I just I'm not sure, what's the reason for the cattle market to rise. I see a lot of cattle on feed. I see a lot, the weights that are growing because of the warm winter. Feed is cheap. I don't know. I kind of feel, if you think about it, we had that big break from the fall highs. We had this rebound. We didn't quite get up to a full retest. It was a lower high. We're now rolling over. Just technically, just the market looks like it's stuck. I think we've talked about this before. It's stuck in a wide trading back and forth trading range. And I think it's going to stay that way through the spring. So the job of a cattle producer is to market, price protect when you're on the upper end of the range. And if you're on the buyer side, the cash side or the buy side of cattle, then you want to buy on the lower end of the range. Right now, we're coming off the high side, but we're not on the lower side yet. So I kind of feel like there's not much to do in the market right now until we have enough of a rally to get ourselves back up to where a seller would be interested, or we just keep correcting. My sense is this market's going to keep correcting. We've gotten the speculator back into sell mode, even though the trigger for it might be in terms of the avian flu has subsided. I think there's other fundamental reasons for the market to go down that just this was just a catalyst to get that ball rolling down. I don't think we're done yet to the downside, in my opinion.
Okay. Right on. All right. Well, good stuff as usual, Sean. Folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what it is you're doing.
At FerritX11 is our Twitter handle. We have a LinkedIn page as well, plus our website, HackettAdvisors.com. We do put from time to time interviews and some information about our outlooks and how we do things to see if our way of using statistics, cycles, and correlations would be of value to those that watch and listen to your show.
Right on, man. You have any appearances coming up anywhere soon?
Washington Market, I'm slated for May 31st.
May 31st. All right. Look for Sean on Market to Market.
Still a little bit away, but May 31st. I was in Sanchez, Florida a few weeks ago, just a few weeks ago. So, I've been keeping myself busy.
That's good.
That's
right. Idle hands. It's a double
that's for sure.
You got to take care of yourself. Right on, man. Well, Sean, appreciate you being the podcast.
Sounds good, Casey. Thanks so much.
See you later this week. Right on. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Check out the video version over on the YouTube channel, which is the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel, as well as TikTok at Moving Iron Podcast. I got a new website up, movingironllc.com. Check it out. There's going to be some information there for the Moving Iron Summit coming up November 4th through the 6th. Registration is open, so if you're interested in going to that, check that out there and get your registration filled out. Sean Hackett's going to be there doing his kind of bit of a roundtable approach to a smaller session breakout type deal, where he's going to have an opportunity to talk about what's going on here as we look towards the beginning of 2024 and the end of beginning of 25 and leaving 24. So looking forward to that. So Sean,
thanks, Casey.
Take care of yourself, man. Talk to you soon. Catch you next week. Right on. I'm with Casey Seymour, Sean Hackett. It's going to be smart, folks. Out.
The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. You'll find us here. Move.